Yo, yo, yo. Check this out. I call myself the vulnerable truth, right? So I think it's about time I give y'all a little preview, actually, my vulnerable truth. If you follow my podcast, or if you know me in person, you'll know that the last 3 years have been pretty tough, not just for me, but for my family as well. My kids going through racism, me losing loved ones back to back to back to back, and me being active in the community, going through a divorce, not being able to return to a job that I love, finally finding another job. So here it is. I'll give it to y'all. My vulnerable, extremely vulnerable, and my deep truth. So when my kids went through the racism, it was hard. It's not something any parent wants their kids to go through. And it's also not something any parent is ready to go through. It's not something any parent have the experience to navigate through without any bumps in the road. You know, we can't do it flawlessly, the way that it sounds, the way that we think, the way that we feel like it should be, because it's also new to us. You know, it's not something that's new to the world or new to our country, but personally, it's something that's new to us. On top of that, July 2019, at 10 o'clock in the morning, I fell 30 feet off a telephone pole at work, and I broke my left hand. I developed PTSD, anxiety, a fear of heights. I'm also left-handed, so it felt like I had to learn how to live life over again, which basically I did. I had no strength in my left hand, my left arm. Even after my cast came off, it took a lot of work, therapy, occupational therapy as well, to be able to get back to a functioning arm. And then November of that year set off a chain of events where I started losing loved ones really close together. And I've lost quite a bit over the last 3 years. And this is a little hard for me, actually. But I have to stay true to my name, the vulnerable truth, because it's a specific reason why I chose that. And all I want to do is be truthful and be vulnerable. On top of work, the racism, being active in the community, I also end up losing the closest person to me, my best friend. And she didn't die or anything, but we lost touch with each other. And that was hard. So I'm gonna break this up into segments. I'm gonna try to take only a few minutes apiece, but I feel like I need to explain the buildup. So starting off was the actual racism that my kids went through. It was every month they were followed in school. My son was put on a Google Maps, a May Google Maps with 24 other black kids called Negro Hill. And at first I was upset. I was pissed, actually. I didn't know how to get myself to a point where I could calm myself down. And it was actually my kids and my wife who brought me back around and let me know that I'm not the one to hold grudges, that I started making changes in my life so I wouldn't be this upset person all the time about everything, that I would be illogical and that I would think things through and that I would make decisions based on that. And at first I wasn't. I was too upset to even see why I started to make changes in the beginning. After my kids had been through so much, all I wanted to do was fight. All I wanted to do was take that pain, that aggression that my kids were, that were being thrown my kids' way. I wanted to take that aggression and put it all on me and also give it back to where it was coming from. And they're the ones that brought me back around to let me know that that's not what I do. That's not who I am. That's not why I've made changes to be the person that I am. And it was them who brought me back around. My kids, my wife. And I became more involved. I became involved at all. I wasn't really involved in the district, going to school board meetings. I wasn't doing any of that. So I started to become involved. And I started talking to someone that I initially wanted fired from their job, which was the president of Chaska High School. I did. I wanted him fired. I wanted him to lose his job. And that was also something else brought to me, because I'm not the type to wish like anything bad on anyone. But I was so enraged by what was going on that that's what I wanted, you know. And once my family brought me back around, I started having conversations with them. And I started speaking more and more with them. And then summer came and the conversations didn't really stop, but school was out. Everybody was taking a break. We figured the racism would stop, but I kept going to school board meetings. Now, speaking about my kids' experiences, my family's experience, community showed up to tell me that that wasn't our experience. That wasn't what happened to us. And I also felt that that wasn't right as well. So I kept talking, but I kept talking in a way that I knew worked for me. And it wasn't for the community. It wasn't to get my point across, but it was a way that kept me safe from my own temper. A way that allowed me to speak and articulate myself the way that I felt I needed to in order to keep everything going for me and my family, for people to hear my experience, our experience. Now, it just didn't happen to my family. It happened to a lot of families that year. It was thrown in our faces over and over again that year. But that's when my journey with being in a community started. And then July 2019, I was getting out of a meeting, went to my first job. Customer cable needed to be replaced. And I climbed the pole to replace the cable. And I was almost done with it. And the strand from pole to pole that's supposed to hold a ton or the weight of a car snapped. And I fell. I fell 30 feet. Now, I thought it was about 20 feet, but when the investigation happened and my managers came to the hospital and to check on me, they had told me like the actual distance of the fall was between 25 and 30 feet. and I broke my wrist. And to me, that day didn't change anything. In a hospital, I just wanted my customer's cable to get up and running, because I knew that me bringing that line down, taking it completely out. What I didn't think about is the rest of my customer's neighbors who had also got taken out for me taking the tap down. So that night, I wasn't supposed to have surgery. And I was supposed to go home. They had put my wrist back in place. I was supposed to go home with my cast, schedule my surgery, and go from there. Somehow, some way, God willing, actually, I ended up in surgery that night. I ended up in surgery with my titanium plate, 3 screws, 3 pins. That'll always be there. Because if it comes out for whatever reason, my wrist can fall out of place anytime that it feels like it. So it's permanent for me. And within the coming weeks, I started having dreams of my fall, nightmares actually, of my fall, of me just hitting the ground. And then it escalated to where I was looking at myself, telling myself to get up, get up, get up. The only problem with that is I never lost consciousness. I never lost consciousness. When I fell, I got right up and called my manager and called the ambulance and told my customer what happened. And, you know, I text my wife and I'd actually let her know that I was fine, but I'd fallen off a pole. So I don't know how I expected her to take that, but I did. And she called me and I explained to her what happened, and she loved work. She loved work. But within the coming weeks, I started to have changes that I couldn't explain. So my PTSD, which I didn't even know was PTSD yet, has started to kick in. So I would have 13, 14, I think the longest was about 14 to 15 hours, a time where I was angry. Or I was sad, or I would just be in this place that I couldn't explain why or how I was there. Which was really weird for me, because I'm usually pretty good at expressing why I feel the way that I feel, but I had no idea. And after the first time, you know, I told myself I would get through it, I would get over it. And I felt that I would, and when it was gone, I felt that I had a handle on it. And I didn't. The following week, it also happened. And the time wasn't as long, but the feelings were a lot more aggressive. And with the feelings being aggressive, I didn't know what that was. I didn't know why that was. And I got through that time. But the time that made me know that I needed some help was, I was on my way to bed and I was almost asleep. And out of nowhere, I started crying for no reason. I had no idea why I was crying. And at that moment, I got up and called the employee helpline, and I scheduled an appointment with the therapist. That night, which was after midnight, they set up a time for me to meet with someone the following day. And I started seeing my therapist the very next day. And at first we went through those questions and talking about what happened and why I was there. And it wasn't until the actual next time that she diagnosed me with PTSD. And the interesting thing about that was, from our questionings or our conversations, her asking questions and a questionnaire I filled out, I found out that I had been dealing with PTSD since the age of 12. 12 was my, I guess, coming out life. It was the first time that I did a lot of things. It was when I joined a gang, and it was when I smoked weed for the first time. It was when I lost my virginity. It was just a time for me. But everything in my PTSD from 2019 has started to show signs and memories and reliving times of my childhood, and I didn't understand that either until my therapist explained it all to me. So I had no use of my left hand, and the left hand is my dominant hand. I didn't want anybody to help me with anything. I wanted to do everything myself. And it wasn't that I didn't want help. Well, it was that I didn't want help, but the actual thing was that I needed help. I needed help readjusting, relearning how to do things. Even signing my name at school board meetings, I would shake, and it would take me 3 or 4 minutes just to sign my name at a school board meeting until someone would probably ask if they wanted me to do it, if I wanted them to do it for me. And sometimes I would. And that was even after my wife yelled at me and told me to let her help me. And like, she really yelled at me because she was upset that I wouldn't let her help. So after that, come November, I lost an uncle and a cousin in the same month, which basically started a chain of me losing people over the next year, 2 years, and 3 years. And it seemed like it just wouldn't stop. So I didn't know how to process that. You know, people were telling me how strong I was, that I wasn't, that I was able to keep going and still doing things. When the truth is, everything that I was doing, I couldn't work yet. So everything that I was doing, I started doing more of. I started being more active in the community, started going to more school board meetings. I started going into schools more. And that was my way of not dealing with what was going on. That was my way of not allowing myself to fully process the things that I was going through. It was my way of not allowing myself to fully grieve the family members and the people that I was losing. That was my rough spot. Now, all of this ties into why I started going, how I ended up going through a divorce. Because I became so active and doing so much in the community. I even ran a school board campaign, which I feel like I ran a pretty good campaign. But had I given myself time to grieve a little bit more, or to be present in the things that were taking place in my life, instead of avoiding it, maybe I would have won that school board election. Maybe not. But I would have definitely given myself a better chance to be higher than what I was. I never allowed myself to fully grieve, and it actually hit me this morning that I'm still not allowing that, you know. So when I started going through my divorce, you know, one of the things was that I care more about the community than I did my own family, which in the beginning, my family was the reason that I even started to be involved with the community. The reason why I became so heavily involved in the community and everything else was because I didn't want to deal with the actual realities of my own life. And I wasn't doing anything in an faithful way. You know, I wasn't doing anything really in an unhealthy way as far as being involved in the community and speaking out in the community and becoming more involved. But me not dealing with my own realities also left me with a wife feeling neglected. And all that fault is not my own, but it's not up to me to point out anybody else's faults. It's just my own. I stopped communicating the way that I normally do, and that's part of something that we had going on with each other as well. But had I to take the time to actually just deal with my life, my struggles, my reality, if I'd have been a little bit more vulnerable with myself, a little bit more truthful with myself, then maybe I wouldn't have been going through a divorce. Maybe I would have won school board. Maybe I would have been more effective in the community. You know, I was upset, feeling like I was set down for no reason. Like I was being punished for no reason. I was in the running for supervisor at my job, and I felt like that was taken away from me. And then when I tried to go back to work and couldn't, I felt like the one job that I absolutely loved was just, it was taken away from me. I had no choice, no say-so in the matter. And I was not willing to do anything else at Comcast to continue that career because I had grown myself for it. And tech ops. So, me saying all of this, oh, let me not forget. Last year in April, I started a new job at Amazon and I started learning things quickly. I started making a name for myself quickly. I was moving fast paced through everything, which also shows the trend in which that I've been doing things over the last 3 years. Now it shows that. And I never even took a step back to even realize that's what I was doing. You know, I thought I wanted to learn everything. I thought that was my way of setting myself up to be the next PA or supervisor at Amazon. Which the whole time, I was continuing to do what I was doing the last 3 years, and I was keeping myself busy to not deal with my realities. Maybe out of fear or maybe out of having that moment to where I just fall apart. That fear of falling apart is something that I have been afraid to do. You know? Because I was I'm someone that everybody seemed to always have it together, you know? But I wasn't afraid of falling apart for them. I was afraid of falling apart for myself. Because I've also dealt with depression since the age of 14. And I was afraid of that coming back and coming back to a point where I couldn't get a handle on it. Or I started to relive the way that I went through depression when I was 14. Which caused me 5 suicide attempts. That's what I was mostly afraid of, that breakdown. So I haven't really grieved. I haven't really given myself time. I just kept moving. I kept pushing. I kept learning and doing things. And I didn't even realize until actually maybe tonight that the things that I've cherished most, which was being a father and being a husband, was the things that were actually suffering because of it. And it wasn't because I was so active, but it was because I closed myself off from my realities, from my pain, from my grieving. And the things that some of the things that I've worked for took a really strong hit for that, to the point where I don't know if we'll ever get that back, if we ever could. And you know, if we can't, that's my bed. I'll make that bed. I'll lie in it, and you know, I'm okay with that. Ultimately, for me and Dara, the only thing that I want is happiness, you know. With someone else, I mean, apart, however that happiness comes, that's ultimately what I want. And that is truth. That is my truth. The question that I've asked myself tonight before this was why? Because I've done so much work with myself and made so many changes and worked on destroying, you know, what built up in me coming from Chicago. That is why I ultimately chose the vulnerable truth, because that is something that we are not taught to do growing up in Chicago. So that's what I wanted. I wanted to destroy that stigma. And, you know, I did, but I didn't notice that I haven't even really given my vulnerable truth. So hopefully this is me living up to my name. Because that's the name that not only do I want for myself, but I want a lot of people to understand, like, and I ask ourselves, are we truthful with ourselves? Are we vulnerable with ourselves? And if we're not, who can we be vulnerable with if we are not choosing that for ourselves first? You know, there's a part of me that really, truly, honestly believe that no matter what you're doing for anybody else, if you're not willing to do it for yourself, you cannot give 110% to anyone or anything or any process, because you haven't given it to yourself. I've neglected myself more than anything or anybody, because these last 3 years I haven't given myself time to grieve. I honestly don't even know how. But I do know I don't have to go so strong all the time. And maybe that moment that I do slow down and I do break, maybe that's the ultimate moment that I've needed. I've had moments here and there where I would cry or I would feel sad. And that's actually been coming up a lot more lately. And I didn't fully understand why, but it makes so much sense now. It's because I haven't been vulnerable and truthful with myself. Not 100%. Because if I had been, then I would have known that this was something that I was already doing. And me coming to this realization and also sharing it with others is me being vulnerable and truthful with you. At the same time, I'm doing it for myself. I didn't practice this. I didn't write it down or anything. But I do know I need to find a way to give myself time. I know I need to find a way to give myself space. I need to find a way to give myself grace. I need to find a way to give myself everything that I give everyone else. And I'll work toward that, you know. One thing that I'm always proud of is being a work in progress all the time. I'm so proud of that because I always feel like I have work to do. I always feel like I have something to improve on. But instead of me projecting it outward, I need to do more inside for me. And then maybe I can get to be who I ultimately am. It's like that funny person that everybody loved, that smiling person that everybody loved. Maybe I'll be funnier. Maybe I'll smile harder. I don't know how that's possible. I don't know how that's possible, but maybe I can. Because me giving myself that grace, that time, that patience, that grieving, that moment of just not being together, not holding it all in, not holding it all together. Maybe that's me getting to my next level of life. And I'm making a journey starting right here, right now. I've talked about a lot of these things in the past, but I've never said this part to anybody. But it's true. It's my vulnerable truth. And this is probably one of the harder podcasts that I've ever done. Because this isn't something that you just feel comfortable with telling everyone. I mean, it's not even something that I was comfortable with acknowledging on my own, for myself, to myself. But if it can't start there, it can't start anywhere. Whew, yeah. Always go hard. Always have. But that's always been a person that I was. And I always will. You know, I'll never stop that. But I don't want to go to the point of self-neglect. I don't want to go to the point of self-sabotage. And I can see ways that I've done it in the last 3 years. And yeah, it's tough, y'all. I mean, being 100% honest with yourself is not easy. Is not something a lot of us can do. And this is me saying that it wasn't something that I was doing. So I hope this hit home for somebody the way it's hit home for me. And honestly, it's like a ton of bricks, you know, but it's also a weight that's lifted off of me. You know, it feels rewarding, like in this moment, that I'm able to get this out, not only to myself, but to anybody who listens to my podcast as well. I'll continue to use this name, The Vulnerable Truth. And I'm going to keep pushing myself to be vulnerable and truthful, starting with me first. And as those times come that I do realize and I do recognize it, then I would love to be able to do a podcast and share it with everyone as I'm experiencing it, which is tonight. I thought about it for maybe 10 or 15 minutes before doing a podcast, and doing a podcast wasn't even on my mind at first. It was just thinking about everything. And then I got the idea to do this podcast. So I really do hope that this resonates with someone and it helps, because I'm pretty sure this will help me. And I don't know what's next. You know what I mean? I really don't. I don't know what's next as far as all of this goes, all of this process, and if I'll have a breakdown moment or anything, but I'm going to stop shying away from it. I'm going to stop being afraid of it. And I'm going to let it happen. This is your boy, The Vulnerable Truth, giving you my vulnerable truth with no filter in it. If it's something that you heard in this podcast that you would like for me to further elaborate on or further talk about or go a little bit deeper into, feel free to message me. My email is vulnerabletruthful@gmail.com. You can always leave messages leave messages through the podcast. I think the podcast is almost everywhere now. I can't even keep track of all the places that the podcast is. But I wanted to not just be any podcast. I wanted to help. You know, I wanted to be beneficial, not just for me, but for someone else as well. There's so many things in life that we don't talk about that we might hear from somebody else that may open up a door for us to start our healing process. I'm hoping that this is my moment for me. And I'm also hoping that it's a moment for anyone else that needs it. The toughest battles people go through are battles that no one else sees, because we fight them within ourselves. And I don't know if that'll ever change, but it would be nice if it did. That way we have a whole community of people that we can rely on, that we can talk to, that's been through some of the things that we've been through, that has experience with some of the things that we've experienced. And not be afraid to talk about it, and not be afraid to be honest about it. That everybody is sharing their own vulnerable truths, and it's okay. But I would love to hear any feedback, any questions, any comments, constructive criticism, whatever it is. And always, 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 anyone that's listening, anyone that have listened, and those that continue to listen, I appreciate you so much. I really do, honestly. It's Wednesday. It's my Friday. Unless they offer overtime tomorrow. We get overtime, then I'm working overtime. Definitely working overtime. But yeah, I hope your hump day is magical. I hope it brings a good end to the week. And I hope it's eye-opening, life-altering, for the better, of course. And I thank you so much. Honestly, I do. I really thank you so much, everybody. Y'all have a good morning. Get out there. Let's get to it. Finish the week strong. Start the day strong. There's nothing you can't get through. There's no battle you cannot win. There's no problem or situation bigger and stronger than you are. You'll always be stronger than anything that you ever come up against. And it don't always seem like it. But we have to get that faith in ourselves that we are. And trust me, you are stronger than anything. So just believe that. And believe in you. Always. Always bet on you. Y'all take it easy. Peace.